Big time count. What B movie will be the ultimate champion? You might think they're crazy, might think they're diseases. But they watch all the shots to find the best of the beast. It's Stan, Jim, Jack, and Nick who watch till it's finished. But their love for these movies can be diminished. And maybe the film's plot has no rhyme or reason. But that's part of the charm, Owen Brad's of the season. The low budget film that it is most true. They find in the flick that's most boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boom, boom, Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boom, boom, Electric Boogaloo.
Yacht Mala! Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, Dan Stanadu, and I am super happy to be with you today to talk about Season 12 of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, the One Shit Wonder. And joining me on our expedition through One Shit Wonderland, I have Nick Jackson.
Greetings and salutations. I'm excited about this. This is going to be a good one.
Okay. And then we also have James Cotta.
I feel it's time I get a nickname. Like, maybe James the Dog Boy Cotta. Mm. That's not bad. Let's work on that. Let's workshop this.
Well, it's interesting.
We got a nickname for you. We got a few. You just don't know it.
Well, and then see, like, we've got Jack Hall, but now Jack could be, like, Jugger Jack Hall or something like that. So, I don't know. Jugger works Jugger great Jack, with Jack Hall, or Jim.
It's pretty good. Sup, boys. Any of you ever spent your entire life like me confusing Rutger Hauer and Wiggs Hauser?
No.
Not even once. Nope.
It's just me, okay?
Totally just you. Well, and speaking of Rutger Hauer, of course, today's movie is The Blood of Heroes, and this one was brought to us by Nick. And so, Nick, you've got a lot of work to do right now. So you're going to explain to us why this is a one shit wonder, and then you get to explain the movie to us.
Okay, this is a one shit wonder because the director, although has quite a career of writing films, this is the only film he's ever directed. It came on my radar actually in my teens, and I've loved this film, and I always wanted a sequel or something to it. It was like one of those like weird video nasties that I never even thought came out in theaters. Although I now just doing research for this podcast, I found it did some places. And it's just a wonderful little film that I love, but at the same time, it is a movie about the future where people play games with dog skulls. So it has the Boogaloo element. In this film, Joan Chen plays Kira, who is just desperate for any kind of recognition outside her workaday world in the post-apocalyptic future, farming what looks to be dead vegetables. And her ticket out of this mess is to play Jugger, a futuristic sport that's kind of like football, but it has a dog skull and weapons, and it's awesome in every way. So when a Jugger team comes to town to challenge her little team, she joins up with them, and they go on an adventure and sort of experience the future world trying to join the mysterious league in the I believe it's called the Red Cities, the big league. They're going to try. And Rutger Hauer's in this, and he's always awesome.
Well, Rutger Hauer is definitely in this for sure.
Yes.
And he's awesome.
Yeah.
I love Rutger. I'm told that it's Rutger, but let's not do that.
No, well, it's funny because when you said that, it's interesting because then I went on a pronunciation site and somebody pronounced, and it came up with Wrecker. So I'm like, well, I don't care. You call him what you like.
Yeah, I mean, this guy has been playing old men since, like, he was 19. So he's definitely, like, visibly, like, you just go, that guy's a Rugger.
And Joan Chen is a Joan Chen.
Yeah.
Goddamn, Joan Chen, I tell you. I had such a crush on Joan Chen in the 90s, mainly because of Twin Peaks.
Mm. Oh man, yes. Oof.
So this is right around the Twin Peaks era, wouldn't it be? Like
1990, so.
Yeah.
And the only reason to watch the movie The Hunted.
I remember that movie, yep.
Wasn't she in China Beach?
I don't believe so, but I could be wrong.
Somebody else. Either way, she's definitely, you know, attractive. Attractive.
I woman may have masturbated over an Asian in China Beach, but I can't say it's her for sure.
That's a lot of detail. that's a surprising amount.
Just brought this to a new place.
Not often is something I said that completely makes me silent.
Yeah, it's like I actually don't know what to say anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping at that point someone else would go, oh, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah, now I remember. Yeah.
I don't. The lady was hot, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the fact that we're talking about everything but this movie, what does that say about it?
Well, I'm going to say that, you know, having thought quite a bit about the apocalypse this year, I think the job I want in the apocalypse is leather mask maker.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, like, that seems to be a gig that you know, just is worth doing. Like, that's everyone seems to need one. You never see in these movies, like, let's get revenge on the leather mask maker. They're all like, hey, like, might need that guy later. What job would you have?
I want to take the guy what recycles car tires.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's oodles of rolls for car tires in the old car tires.
And they all seem to do with headgear. It's weird. Just everybody has a tire on their head in some way.
See, again, like Stan and I could open a business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's got the raw materials. I incorporate that into the masks and or helmets that I make.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good Jack, what would you be your apocalyptic job?
Whore.
Oh. You call us apocalyptic?
Come on. He is a stone thrower if ever saw a stone thrower.
No, but okay. Here's in relation to the movie. Now, you remember Joan didn't want the scrawny guy. So Jack might actually have a chance in this post-apocalyptic future.
Like they wouldn't eat me and roast me and keep that knife village going for a couple of years.
What were those guys' jobs? What do you think they would call that job? Like a male courtesan? harem boys? They're like a reward if you win kind of thing.
Yeah,
so.
Crappy prize. I think crappy prize is the price. The problem. Yeah. Oh man.
I like so in this movie, Joan Chen is trying to prove herself, and Rutger Hauer really believes in her, okay, Rutger Hauer. really, she's trying to prove herself, and then finally, the other guys in the group, Vincent D'Onofrio especially, who looks like a baby in this. I pointed him out to my wife while I was watching this, and I said, "Hey, do you recognize that guy?" And she did not.
Honestly, for a half the movie, I was just like, "Wow, Adam Baldwin must be really old."
What was getting me was, I don't know, how was it that Vincent D'Onofrio manages to look in a movie at a post-apocalyptic future less run down than he did during CSI. And, you know, and things like that. Like,
about 15 or 20 minutes into this, as Joan Chan's trying to prove herself, I'm like, is this Rudy? Is this movie Rudy?
Yes.
Joan Chan is Sean Astin, just like looking for a shot.
Pretty much.
He did this 2 years, by the way, after he had done Full Metal Jacket.
And funny, he looks older in Full Metal Jacket.
I know. That's why I was looking it up, because I thought
maybe
this
haircut
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's that good of an actor. He's playing younger.
He is. He is a great actor. I love him. But
also, know. About 20 minutes into this movie, I decided that that Nick had tricked me into watching sports.
Yes, he did.
There's a significant amount of this film given over to the sport, the dog skull football thing that they're doing, like more of a rugby, I guess.
Which actually has become some sort of organized sport in real life.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Jugger's an actual thing in Australia and Germany. They play it. They've even had international matchups and stuff now.
Yes. Although it does kind of look like the Harry Potter shit you see at cons.
Wow.
With foam stuff and a lot of imaginary work going on.
Anyways, Nick, you interrupted our journey there. James, what happened to you 30 minutes into the podcast?
That's what I realized, that if you took out these slow motion shots of Joan Chen, this movie would be about 65 minutes instead of there's quite a bit of slow-mo once you get into it. It makes just we see basically three entire matches of what is not a short sport.
Yeah, for sure.
I would have been – I think the amazing thing to me about them making it a real sport is because I feel like I would have – I really was wanting an explanation of the rules and roles better. Like, obviously there was not a lot of rules because, you know, but there obviously was rules and or positions that people were playing. And I'm like, other than the quick, and I guess there's the person with the chain. I can't remember what they were called. Like, what are the rest of them? They just seem to be hitting each other. And there's no strategy or pattern.
No, there is strategy because you can swap. Because like they were like, oh, you know, I take this guy. Then you come over and hold him down, and I do something else.
There was the quick, the charge, the slash, the guy with the chain, and the sword.
Okay, so what's the difference between the slash and the charge?
The slash has a small two-blade, or it's just sort of a pole, and the charge has a pole with the nubbin on the end and a hook on the other.
Okay. So other than the weapon, what's the difference in the role?
I gotta be honest, in fairness to the whatever they call the sport in this movie, that's still more than I understand of cricket.
The game. It's called the game.
Just the game. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
The game. Yeah. They called it that.
That's all they
It's an interesting
now.
Movie. Is that
where the rapper gets his name from?
Yeah, exactly.
I saw this. I mean, I saw this also. You know, like it was on. You know, it was for a while there. It was a pretty regular film on. You know, your pay network, like movie network channels. You know, like you know, and so I mean, I remember seeing it like that too, and it was. I remember enjoying it at the time. It was, you know, like something where I was like, you know, I hadn't seen a lot like that, and it felt a little different, and didn't make a huge impression on me or anything like that. So it was interesting to go back and rewatch it because, I mean, it definitely immediately, like it's like 10 seconds in, you're like, oh yeah, I know what this is. You know, I didn't recognize the name because the name's kind of generic here, which is probably why, what was it called? Like, I think the international release is called Rise of the Juggers or something like that. Or
Ballad of the Juggers. Something like that. Salute to the Jugger.
Yeah, that's a better name as far as like being memorable than Blood of Heroes, which is just so generic. But yeah, I mean, I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is film. That's going to be interesting to revisit.
I hadn't come across this, and even though I am a fan of Ratgauer Hauer,
Mr. Hauer,
Monsieur Hauer. What's Mr. in Dutch.
Raptor Hauer.
Raptor Hauer.
Sallow. Just call him Sallow.
Sallow. Salo. That's a memorable name right there.
Oh, so, isn't it just?
Yeah, I literally looked that up 15 minutes ago, and it had still gone from my head. so I hadn't seen this. I really enjoyed the film. I like the post-apocalyptic films. I like what they get right. I like what they get wrong. It turns out there aren't sports in the apocalypse.
So, yeah. Yeah, there are no gatherings in the apocalypse. So, I mean,
other than that, it's about the same. Anything else you want to say before we get into the scoring of this?
Well, I mean, it's because the thing is, it is a tough film to classify because it's not a Hollywood film. I mean, it's an Australian-American production and filmed in Australia, and it's not really a B film, even though it's not a big budget film, you know. And it's not really, it's like got a cult following, obviously, but it's not really an art house film. I guess it's like a high concept indie film is almost what it is. Like, does that sound right?
For years, I thought it was an HBO original.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Like I say, it was on those networks all the time. But yeah, I mean, when we're talking about David Peoples, I mean, this is a guy who wrote 12 Monkeys and co-scripted Blade Runner and he, you know, wrote the script to Unforgiven in 1976 and wasn't made until film until 1991, much to Stan's regret. So he's, you know, I mean, like, I don't know if we got a better pedigree than that guy.
That is the weirdest film to have on your, like, everyone else likes this and I hate it list. I guess everyone's got one of those, like, but.
Perhaps I need to watch it again, but it just bored the shit out of me, so it's just like.
I'm not going to ask you to watch something that you didn't like, but.
Have you not watched it since 1993?
Probably not. Nope.
Yeah, it's worth revisiting.
Yeah, you're basically the same person you were in 1990. So, like, yeah, I wouldn't imagine that your view on things would have changed that much.
I don't watch a lot of Westerns, though, so that's all.
Yeah, I have something to do with it. But the point being, though, that, yeah, this is an interesting film. I don't think it's the right film for this podcast. I think it's too good a film. You know, it's an indie film. It's too good a film as far as being, like, it's not like you're like, oh, there's schlock. There's like no schlock to this. I don't know what your scores will be, but, you know, things like that. It's like, I immediately look at these things and go, well, how's it going to score in that first category? And if it's a no, then I throw it out, right? And I just don't, it's kind of like, you know, we've come across this before where it's like, yeah, that's a fine film, but not what this podcast is looking for. What I'm saying, trying to say ahead of time is the scores will likely reflect this to people, but we're not saying don't watch it. We're saying don't watch it with your Boogaloo lens because, you know, it's probably not fair to the movie.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend watching this.
Yeah.
So now we do the thing?
Yeah.
Now we do the thing.
All right. In our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
When Nick, you know, pitched this movie with Rutger Hauer and Joan Chen and Vincent D'Onofrio with a dog skull and a sport, I was truly excited. And then I watched the movie. I watched the movie in and about trying to keep myself awake. And then I finished watching the movie, and I was just like, now I'm not quite as excited for talking about it. I'll give it a 3.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I picked this, I hadn't actually watched it throughout. I remembered, like, a lot of the schlockier elements, that it's a sports movie in a post-apocalyptic future, played with quite often a fresh dog skull. So, yeah, I can't go high on schlock either. I'll give it a 4, though.
Yeah, the elements are there, but the execution is not schlocky at all. You know, mm-hmm. So that's the problem with the film. Yeah, it's kind of a, 3 seems about right.
3 sounds good to me too.
Yeah,
I think it is playing a sport with a dog skull. It is post-apocalyptic, and post-apocalyptic is going to be a little schlock all the time.
Yeah, go ahead. Shouldn't have cut you off there.
I was going to say, like, I hope. I hope Jack has more act that he can add to my comment.
Well, it's kind of funny because, like I say, I remember liking it back in the day, you know, not like, but now it's like, I think I was also, I wouldn't say I was falling asleep, but it was slow. It's a slow paced film, which Unforgiven is obviously too.
I will say we watched the international cut, which is much longer.
10 minutes longer, yeah.
I did watch both cuts in preparation for this. Just to see the difference. The international cut adds absolutely nothing important. I definitely go with the shorter version.
Well, isn't it
moves more briskly.
Isn't the ending supposed to be? I mean, the international cut's the one that's largely preferred by, and I know the fans and people and the director, obviously. It gives a much less optimistic ending, and isn't that supposed to have more weight to it?
I don't know. My read on it is it's sort of the same, but I found most of the difference in the international cut was we had less lead up to the Red City, which is really where the movie sort of drags.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the guys in the Jeep. You've got one less game in there, the boring game right before they decide to go to the Red City. I just found it the American cut a much brisker movie and just didn't have the slow points. I didn't think that the difference of ending was really much to make a big deal about.
Well, and obviously the cut I would have seen all those years ago would have been the US cut, because that's what it would have been airing on the you know, the pay movie channels at the time. So I mean, yeah, I could see definitely why you were saying that you were bored there, Stan. I get it. It's very slow moving, you know. More so, I say it moves slower than Unforgiven.
I actually found it slower once they were in the city. Because, I mean, narratively, you know they're going to make it, like they're going to get their challenge accepted eventually. So the amount of time that between when they're denied the challenge against the professional level. The league. Thank you.
The time between time that and when they these things, didn't he? The game,
know,
the league.
I know that's why it's not sinking. That's not why it's not sticking. Probably. Yeah. I mean, the amount of time between when they first enter the city and when they actually start that final combat is quite long, and narratively, it's not like they're going to walk away at that point. You know they're going to have that match, so it's kind of plods a little for me because of that. Yeah,
it does depend a lot on the sexual chemistry of Joan Chen and Rutger Hauer, which is just an odd matchup.
Yeah,
who, as you said, always looked old, so he looks like her dad. The next category is called More Heart.
Did you give a score? Oh, yeah, you did. Three.
I did. Three. Yeah. More Heart Than Budget and converted to American dollars from Australian, 6.1 million.
In 1989.
1989, yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, they got good use out of the tires in this movie. You know, Rutger Hauer's an interesting actor because he doesn't often go overboard with his delivery on things, but he most definitely didn't go overboard with his delivery in this case. I don't know that anybody did except for Vincent D'Onofrio. Overall, I don't know. I have nothing really to say about this, so I'm going to give it a 3.
Wow. I thought everybody was in it. I mean, sure, like nobody's chewing up the scenery, but I mean, the cast is all very talented, which makes this even harder to pick, but I don't think anybody phoned it in. I wasn't wincing at dialogue once in this movie. And I mean, this looks much better than a $6.5 million movie in even adjusted for the time period. So yeah, I'll go 7.
Okay. We have expectations on what these like post-apocalyptic, you know, few films will look like, and it follows very much in line with what we kind of would expect I think, you know, the thing about if you're doing a movie set in the future or, you know, and in a post-apocalyptic world, probably that's the easiest one to do because you don't need special effects. It doesn't need any of that stuff to tell its story. It could have used more money, probably. Did it need more money? No. Did they try to make the best movie they could, and was the budget a hindrance because it wasn't massive? No. So six?
Really, what stood out for me in this movie was the makeup effects and how much care went into really making these juggers beat up by the, like, as the movie goes along. Mm-hmm. We didn't even mention Delroy Lindo, who's a fantastic awesome. Actor, really underused actor. He never got that role that I think, broke him loose, but I always enjoyed him. And he is so scarred up by the end of this film. So six for me as well. I think there was, I think that's really where they were, put in the box, was in what these characters looked like, making them part of the set.
You sold me. I'll go up to a five.
All right.
All right. I soloed the game. If you want a great film with him in a lead role, I mean, I'd give that. Of course, then you'd be watching sports.
What was the name of it?
Soul of the Game. I believe that's an HBO movie. It's based on the real life the other players that weren't Jackie Robinson,
right,
that could have broken into the Major League Baseball. Okay. Yeah, okay. It's a really cool story.
Hmm. Clockers. That was the one that I really loved him in.
Great movie.
All right, what the fuck moments.
All right. Well, I consider it what the fuck that people are actually playing the sport. That's what I consider what the fuck. Do they use a dog skull, or do they use a falsified dog skull?
No, they don't. They don't even use a pike. You have to get like a football in a bowl.
I think he's asking in real life, were they using a real dog skull?
Real life, they're using a football in a bowl.
Yeah, that's actually what I was asking. He got it right.
Okay.
Yeah. The concept, I guess they have lots of dogs and lots of dog skulls, so therefore it works as well as a ball as anything.
Well, dogs are food at that point.
Yeah.
Well,
so why not?
They tell you from the top that no one knows why they use a dog skull.
Right, yeah. That's
good writing. People are going to ask. Tell them we don't know why.
Three.
Oh, that was your score. Three.
I'm glad they didn't. Would have been weird to explain it, honestly.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
This is not high on WTFs. I mean, even the stuff that played weird back then, such as the women taking their sexual conquests from these small towns and stuff. That played weird, I remember, in the 90s. Now, not so much. Everything sort of has a logic to it, so I can't go high on this. I'll go three as well.
It's actually kind of progressive that this film, that the women play with the men, you know, because we still don't see that in sports, you know. that's actually an interesting point. Yeah, I mean, the biggest WTF is if he knows the film so intimately, why did Nick pick it, knowing that it has no schlock or WTFs? But
it had been a couple years.
that bodes poorly for memorable moments.
Two. I'll give it a two.
The only real kind of standout what the fuck for me is they go to the city. They're heading to the city, and the city is like an elevator in the middle of the desert, and then it's an underground world that they go into. So they're going in this elevator that's moving, I'd say like maybe like a foot a second-ish, maybe a bit faster than that. And it's clear that hours and hours have passed.
Yes.
I'm trying to like – I mean, they didn't give you a real number for how far down they must be, but I mean, I think center of the earth would be optimistic. That would be would be pretty comparable for it, because they fall. Like, people fall asleep. It's that long, so that's a bit. What I call it, journey to the center of the Thunderdome. Mm-hmm. So only two for me though, because again, it's it's a sports movie in the post-apocalypse. There's quite a bit of those. Memorable moments.
Two. Yeah, I'm just going to give it a two. I'm not going to remember other than the fact that it's, you know, yeah.
I don't know. I love this movie. Every time I see it comes on a streaming service, I'm tempted to click on it. So obviously it stuck with me. Not to mention, in the WWF, we probably should have mentioned the old guy's backpack. That was great. The old Chinese cabinet on his back. That was hilarious. But, yeah, that's not memorable. But I will – so I have to go with sex. I love this. Yeah.
I had forgotten the movie. But as soon as I saw the first frames, I remembered it. And I remembered where I watched it when I saw it. And I had memory of the juggers and everything like that. So it's probably – like, I forgot it. And yet I have images of it clearly burned into my mind. So it succeeded in some level in this. The fact that it made a actual sport, a real life sport, kind of gives it a little extra of an uptick on this for me. So I'll give it a six.
I think there's chunks of this that I'll remember. There's large swaths that I won't. Like, I'm going to remember the sport, but not necessarily much like of the third act when they go into the underground city. So five for me on this one. The final category is crazy concept.
Well, it's Rudy with a dog skull in Mad Max Thunderdome land. I mean, I think the pitch would be a tad weirder than a normal pitch, but it's really a combination of movies that we've seen, you know, a whole lot. So I'll go with a four.
Wow. Yeah, I thought this would be the cleanup category. Yeah, there is no future sport genre. You've got like maybe four films. So yeah, I have to go higher. And I mean, this wasn't exactly like a bargain basement. It wasn't expensive, but it wasn't a bargain basement film. So I do think that ups the crazy factor on the concept a little. I'll go as high as an eight even.
Rudy came out in 93, so I don't know if I'd call it Rudy. Though I get what you're saying.
It's a sports movie. You know,
I can read
exactly where this was going, at, you know, 5 seconds into the movie. So
that's true. And the thing about it is, it's not a crazy concept. The sport is a crazy concept. The movie, there's nothing crazy about this at all. Like, it totally fits in with the genre and everything like that. There's absolutely nothing. The sport itself, the concept is crazy. But then if you start thinking about it, it's like, well, if you're in – people would want a sport. They would not have – like, look at baseball. I mean, baseball was created because people didn't have much – they had a ball and a stick. Like, what would people have? And so it kind of makes sense even if you look at it from the perspective of the world they're in. So I think it's pretty low. I think it's a three.
I think what boosts it above that for me is that our heroic lead is Joan Chen.
That's true.
This sports movie thing and there's not, you know, hundreds, but there is, you know, Rollerball and Death Race 2000 and all the, and so there are all those kinds of films. So, five for me on this.
You know what? The Joan Chen's a good point because it really is her movie. I mean, Rutger Hauer or Rutger or Ratger, but Ripley, whatever you want to call him, he's kind of a secondary player in many ways. It's really her film as the lead. So that's interesting. That puts it up to a four.
All right. And each season we have six secret modifiers. None of them apply to this film.
That's become a regular occurrence this season.
It really has. And perhaps when we're workshopping modifiers for next season, we'll take that into account. That brings us to a final total of 43.5 out of 100, which puts it tied with Halloween 6, Curse of Michael Myers, producer's cut.
So good job, at least, Nick, destroyed Food Fight. Just slaughtered it.
Yeah. I mean, Food Fight couldn't – I mean, it's – we call Food Fight the bottom of the octagon, so it's not like it can move further out than that. But it's
– no.
It puts it in like 87th place or whatever we're at.
Yeah. But That's okay. If nothing else, the next film, who knows how it'll score, but it's certainly going to be a hard left turn from Blood of Heroes.
It is. And you know, I mean, hell, before we even go to our business, our next film, of course, coming up is Jack's Fatal Deviation, which sounds like you need to go for surgery for that. But do you want to explain why Fatal Deviation is a one-shot wonder?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
We could probably do that in the episode we're talking about.
That's what I'm thinking. Make them tune in.
All right. Well, then.
Just give them a tease. Give them a tease, though.
It is Ireland's only mix or martial arts movie, so we'll say that.
Okay. All right. Jim, do some business.
All right. Please subscribe and rate the podcast on your favorite podcast app and on YouTube. And we are sponsored by WeTalkPodcasts.com. They have a website where you can find this old octagon we've been talking about, the goddamn octagon. And also, they have a Facebook and they have a Twitter. And we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yay, us.
Good for us.
Yeah. All right. Well, Season 12 concludes next episode with Fatal Deviation and also concludes with us choosing our movies for Season 13. So many reasons to tune in to next episode, right? Yes, exactly.
That's right.
And to find out why it qualifies under this category.
Ooh, yeah, wow, like the drum.
That's the real hook.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No question about it. All right, well, I think we're done talking about Blood of Heroes and Juggers and stuff, so let's go and get ready for Fatal Deviation. So, for Jim, and for Jack, and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
From the author of Blade Runner and Lady Hawk.
Juggers coming! Juggers! Juggers! Juggers coming! They're coming! They're coming!
In a future ravaged by war, all eyes are on Juggers. Outcast champions playing a game of survival.
Punish him! Punish him!
This is the story of Kidda, who has heard tales of a world far better than the one fate has given her.
Is there really such a thing as soap?
She will do anything.
I got speed, I can run. How quick for you.
She will risk everything to be one of the Juggers. It is the story of Sallow, banished from a place of honor in the underground Red City because of a woman.
I like the blood of heroes.
Now, this woman will lead him back.
We could play a team from the league.
Theirs will be a journey through a gauntlet of time and trial.
Get her loose!
To that fabled city, where Sallow will challenge the Jugger who took his title.
He could lose that other eye easily enough.
Where Kidda will discover that the world of her dreams is no dream at all.
I don't want the attention of the league.
But I do.
Rutger Hauer.
It must be soft. Skin with no scars.
I like scars.
And Joan Chen of The Last Emperor.
They accepted the challenge! 100 slow! 3 times!
The salute of the Jugger.
I wanted to win.
It's not over.